Let me give you one stunning data point. In the past year, companies in the TSIA Cloud 40 Index have reduced the percentage of revenue they spend on SG&A by over 5%. That is a large number, and it was achieved mostly by reducing headcount. Now, these same companies want to get back to focusing on growth. Growth without dramatically increasing sales and marketing spend. I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today I will be talking with Brent Grimes, the CEO of Reef AI, and we will be exploring how technology companies can leverage AI to drive revenue growth. So let's get this insight engine humming. Welcome, Brent. It's great to see you again. We've met once before. And let's just start here. How long have you been around and what was the catalyst for creating the company?
Yeah, great to be here, Thomas. Happy to be chatting today. We've been around about 3.5 years, and Reef was really born out of a previous experience I had at MuleSoft. So prior to starting Reef, I was at MuleSoft for 7 years, built and led the customer success account management function there. And as we were scaling, we were having a hard time keeping up with our customers. And we knew there was a lot of value locked in our customers that we were having a hard time unlocking in a way that was predictable and allowed us to really drive a consistent land to expand experience. So we looked at some of the tools we had on the shelf. We also looked at what was in the market, and we didn't find anything that would help us really start to better prioritize our customers in a way that we could selectively invest to drive predictive growth within our customer base. So we pulled a bunch of data about our customers internally, begged, borrowed, and stole some internal resources from analytics and data scientists, and we charged to go do it on our own. And so what we learned in that process was we learned we could create a pretty good score based on the data we had with some experimentation. And it gave us the confidence that we could move from a model where we're kind of using our gut feel to invest in customers and just spending a little bit of time with a lot of customers to a model where we could invest selectively and move to what we call outlier engagement. So using our scoring, we're going to invest in the customers that are statistically most likely to grow if we make the right investment. And so our goal at the time was to maintain performance at a lower cost footprint. And what we learned in this process was not only did we lower cost, but we were able to increase performance. So our growth rate started to reaccelerate. Our net retention rate started to climb as a result of this initiative. So that was really when it was clear to me that we're not the only people in the market that have to be struggling with this, trying to get better at how we allocate resources, ideally based on revenue impact. So, and I also realized how hard it was for us to do internally, how expensive, how time consuming, how many resources needed to be involved. And it was really something we could only afford to do as a once a year planning exercise. So the whole vision for Reef is if we can take the hard parts of pulling data together, normalizing it, building good history, and then creating these outcome-based scores and do it in a way that's plug and play for other businesses, there's a really exciting business there. And that was the vision for Reef. And that's what we've been charging to do over the last 3.5 years.
Great. Fantastic. So this is perfect what you're articulating there in terms of why Reef AI exists. Because as you know, you and I spoke once before that we're researching AI use cases for workflows related to revenue generation. And it's interesting because our research is showing that using AI to improve renewal rates is the first place companies are tending to start if they're going to apply AI to help with revenue. And so let's start right there. How does Reef assist, you know, specifically there? Click into that a little bit more.
Sure. And when you talk about AI, there's definitely different categories of AI. And there's been a lot of frenzy around generative AI. And most of the use cases to date around generative AI have been really productivity focused and less directly and squarely focused on revenue. And so what we found is that the best opportunity in the short term for revenue gain is the tried and true area of AI, which is machine learning. And so the ability to take advantage of a lot of customer data that most organizations have, apply machine learning in a way that you can get good at predicting churn risk, get good at predicting downgrade risk, using proven machine learning and data science approaches to do better selective investment in customers well in advance of that renewal cycle, engage them while there's time to still mitigate risk, and give the people involved some idea of the best actions they can take to mitigate that risk can have a really profound impact on renewal performance. And I think that there's a lot of companies that struggle either because they're trying to still use a generalized health score to do risk mitigation, or maybe they do have data science teams, but those data science teams don't really understand the mechanics of go-to-market or really understand the problem space, or they can build a model, but it's very difficult to take a model and then go operationalize it, right? So we found by helping organizations close the gap between data science and go-to-market and really plug their data into Reef, get good, effective churn prediction scoring models, downgrade prediction scoring models, notify their team with recommendations and track the effectiveness and the ROI on those recommendations, that we have the ability within 2 to 3 quarters to deliver substantial ROI on churn prevention, risk mitigation around renewals in a way that's been very repeatable across different customers.
So I really want to spend some time on this use case here, because I know from talking to companies, and we talk about using technology around renewal, I want to parse apart what you just said there, because it's really important. So first of all, do people often use things like health scores? So if you say, are you using data and analytics to help with renewal management, right? People say, well, yeah, we have a health score. And if somebody's red, you know, we know we have a problem. And that's a good play. And some people don't have that yet, but that's great. If you have some type of scoring mechanism, which automatically flags, hey, you're going to have, you know, a problem with the customer here. But let's take that next click over. When you talk about machine learning and models, so this is where you're leveraging data to basically do more analysis and say, hey, it's not just that they don't have enough users logged in or they're not spending enough time logged in. Sure. We're doing more sophisticated. So click a little bit more on that modeling, because you just said, you know, you got to create the models. And then the models are not only going to flag the customer, but the models can make recommendations. Is that what I heard?
Yeah. So it's a really good point. So I do think the most common way that people prioritize customers today, as you said, is with a health score. And a health score is fine as a way to get started and putting a stake in the ground and saying, we're going to prioritize customers based on something, right? And but the health scores are typically built based on combining fields of information you have about your customers and using your own knowledge of the business and kind of best guess to weight and determine what are the important signals that we want to test for, that we want to identify and make our team aware of when we see something that seems like it's projecting risk in the business. And that's a fine place to start, but it's also very limiting for a couple of reasons. One, health scores are typically used for a lot of different purposes. They're used to flag risk. They're used to flag growth opportunity. They're used to understand health more generally. And the more things a score tries to do, the less things it can be really good at. And so there's a big gap between kind of rules-based health scoring and actually taking advantage of data science and machine learning models to build really good predictive models that can help flag customers that are statistically likely to churn, not based on your educated guess, but based on real data science and probabilities, right? So the idea is that if you can combine customer data, you don't have to actually know what has the biggest impact on churn, because the model will tell you that. It will tell you how good it is at predicting churn. It will also tell you what are the top to bottom list of feature, you know, product features or customer circumstances that have the biggest correlation to churn, right? So that's the difference. You can really get a concrete idea of what matters in a machine learning based model.
So let's just pause on that, because again, I'm really drilling in here because I want to make this very concrete for our audience about well, what's different here, right, with AI. So again, if we go to a health score model, and in health score models, it can be predictive. So, you know, TSI, we have health scores for our members, and we have a great data analytics team. And the approach there is what you were talking about. You identify variables. So I'll just use our business case here. Hey, do members benchmark with us? Yes or no, right? And then you can, do they attend a conference? Yes or no. Do they download content? Yes. And so you look at very discrete variables, and you can start to do sort of that correlation analysis. Say, gosh, if they're below this threshold, that's a flag, and we can statistically show that. So that's good, right? You have to do a hell of a lot of work, and you have to keep testing those variables discreetly. And what we do is every year we say, are they still the right variables? The data team has to go back in there. And what you are articulating is machine learning is where you cram it full with a bunch of data, and it's going to come back and start telling you what the relevant variables are. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. So it will provide those answers to you so that you can then, one, understand what's important, two, build much more specific plays around. If you know what the problem is and you know what leads to churn or you need what leads to risk, then it's much easier to build plays to go mitigate that directly and act in the risk proactively, right? And the idea is that you don't want to build a scoring model that's optimized to tell you a customer is going to churn 5 days in advance of renewal. You really want that model to be optimized, you know, 6 months, 9 months, a year in advance, so that you have time to engage early, mitigate that risk before you even get into that renewal conversation. It shouldn't be a renewal play or conversation. It should be a, you know, mid-cycle engagement to really understand, okay, they're underperforming on certain use cases. We know that's a big factor in retention at time of renewal. Let's get in early and get them going on those use cases and get them in better shape before we even get to that renewal conversation.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I have to ask a follow-up question here in terms of you have a machine learning model. It is helping you understand, oh, these are the risk factors. And let's, you know, start create some, you know, let's flag them. Let's start doing some mitigation. I'm curious in your experience as you've been deploying this now, right? Directly, you know, the first time you ever did this and plus, you know, other customers, I'm going to put a dollar on the table and a guess. I will guess that by using the machine learning model, often a customer will learn that there are variables impacting renewal that they did not realize. That basically the model's coming back and saying, well, you know, this is a problem. And they look at it and go, well, that was never on our health score. Really? And I'm curious, is that something that plays out?
Yeah, 100%. So there's always a few things that are instinctual that they want to test and get validation on. But in every case, there are surprises or things that weren't as obvious that emerge as part of that process. I mean, even when we did this at MuleSoft, a great example of this is, and this is more of an expansion or upsell case, but the premise still applies, is one of the things that we learned in our analysis that we were completely blind to was that prior to an expansion, there was an upswell in kind of marketing engagement activity, right? So more people coming to events, more people coming to the website. And like if you reverse engineer it, it makes perfect sense, right? If they're talking about expansion internally, there's probably more people getting involved that are coming and checking out who you are and what you're all about. And so it makes sense, but we were completely blind to this signal because it wasn't something that was connected to our kind of sales tech stack, right? It lived separately within marketing. By pulling this in, it allowed us to design a play to say, look, when we see this signal, we don't want that customer making the decision on their own without our input. We want to be part of that conversation because we can help one, make sure that it actually materializes into expansion. And two, we could probably help increase the size of the deal, scope of what they're doing, and shape it into something larger than it would be if we just let them run with it organically. Yep. So these are the kind of insights that typically come out in these analyses that bring new tools to bear that allow you to really get much more surgical in the way that you go after these opportunities or these risks in a way that can really change revenue outcomes.
Yeah. Now there's really two important thoughts, you know, for people to internalize around, well, why is this different, right? Okay. AI, woo, we're doing AI. Why is this thing truly different, right? Around renewal management. The first one is the models, these machine learning models are going to help you identify risk factors in renewal that you probably from an intuitive perspective, or whatever, you weren't going to figure out. So that's huge. That's a huge step forward. Yeah. The other thing you just put on the table is these models also, you want to inform them from as many data streams as possible. So like you said, we start bringing in telemetry. And again, this is one of the flaws. Okay, I'm in customer success. I've got a health score. I look at the five things that I can track in customer success. And that's like, I'm fixated on that. And I don't even realize that this telemetry that we could be gathering and using it to inform our model from the marketing website is actually going to give me killer insight on my you know, risk here. And so that is another huge click over, you know, in terms of just a step function in terms of capability if you're truly leveraging AI. And by the way, I just have to tell you, I was speaking to a CEO of one of our member companies literally just 2 hours ago, and he said, look, you know, there's all this hype about AI and we don't want this sort of high level stuff. You know, we want to know like what are the real use cases. And I told him, I said, this is exactly the journey we're on. And I said, hey, by the way, I have a podcast coming up here with the CEO of Reef AI. And that is what we're clicking into, not the hype, but the real use cases that have a big ROI, right? And so that's why I'm really taking time to like, here's the step function increases. But I'm going to jump a little bit ahead. We're going to come back to some of the questions I had queued up earlier. But I want to jump to the question, though, of data, because you know the common thing here. So we're talking about, okay, if you can get data from your CRM system, if you can get data from your marketing website, et cetera, you can start to put in these models. But everyone I talk to says, oh my God, my data is a mess. And how long does it take to get the data to actually make these models functional? And so you opened up by saying, you know, within X amount of time, you can start to see a functioning model. Help people understand what that lift looks like, because I think right now it's daunting for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's the most common objection we get, which is, hey, our data is the worst you've ever seen. There's no way you'll be able to make sense of it, right? And I think that there's a few things we do to help. I guess the short answer is we have been able, every customer we've engaged and where we've dug into the data, we've been able to make sense of it and produce good models, right? And part of the reason is that we do not lean on data that requires people to enter and upkeep information. Almost inevitably, that data is never complete enough or current enough to really be useful in these models. What we lean on is data that's generated either through standard processes like sales history, for instance, right? So salespeople don't like to spend a lot of time in systems, but they are pretty good at keeping their opportunities up to date and tracking opportunities to completion, whether they win them or whether they lose them, right? So all of that opportunity history we pull into Reef, and it provides really good signal. We track things not just at the opportunity level, but we really look at the contract level, the product level, what are the start and end dates on the subscription, and really try to build up the dynamics of these business. Again, whether they were successful or whether they were not, there's a lot of good insights we can get from all of the sales history and the account overview information in Salesforce. We also pull in support engagement data, another reliable source of data, because support tickets, again, have very standard life cycles and flags that are captured along the way. So it's also a good reliable source of data. Marketing engagement data as well is consistent. The other big area is machine-generated data. So this would be, if you're a software product, for instance, or even a hardware product with some kind of monitoring telemetry, you have signal coming from your product that's updated frequently, stored in a warehouse. You've got lots of good history, right? And so I would say this is typically where you find the most meaningful correlation or signal. So the way that they're using your solutions are really good indicators of future outcome, right? But one of the cool things about our approach is that's really nice to have, but it's not required. Like, we work with software product organizations. So we have support organizations who have annual support contracts that they're looking to understand, are they likely to upgrade or downgrade, right? That we can build models on. Or managed services businesses who, again, aren't traditional software products, but they also have these annual subscription contracts, and they want to understand which ones are likely to reduce value or gain value, et cetera. So there's a lot of, I would say, latitude in our approach to find the data that will be complete enough and meaningful enough to produce these models. And then we can give you pretty quick insights into kind of where you are in that continuum and our ability to work with the data. And then from there, once we validate that, I'll just give you a quick overview of kind of a typical onboarding process with Reef. Okay. So the first step is data connectivity. Prior to even doing business together, we're probably going to have to get through InfoSec and make sure that they understand we are SOC 2, Type 2 compliant, and GDPR, and the things that are important from their standpoint. The other thing that's really important about Reef is we don't rely on personally identifiable information, right? So we only need information at a company level, not an individual person level, which again, really helps us kind of clear the path for security sign-off and InfoSec. So day one, the first goal is just to get us access to data, right? So we'll send instructions on how we get connected to Salesforce and maybe Snowflake and Zendesk, if you have, you know, Zendesk or something else for support. And again, there's a, you know, small set of subset of kind of MVP data sources that we look for out of the gate. And then we can always add things over time. And that can take, on the low end, as little as a couple of days. And again, if there's a lot of red tape and an organization, it might take a couple of weeks to get access. Then the data starts flowing. And really, the biggest part of an onboarding is we do the heavy lifting. So your data teams don't have to do a lot of lifting to prepare the data for Reef. But we really need to understand your business, and we need to understand what your data means, right? Everybody's CRM is structured similarly, but people name fields different names and might have three fields that are all very similar, and we didn't need to know which one's current, right? So there's a lot of just hashing out the details and the data for us to really get a clear picture of your business, right? And that can take, again, from a couple of weeks to probably 4 to 6 weeks on the high end. If you've got a lot of data and it's very unique and we need to get our arms around it and get an understanding. And then the final part of that is once we get the data organized, it flows into our application. It's prepared for our data scientists to dig in and start doing the modeling. And that's where we really engage, because we'll take your existing hypotheses about your business. So what do you think is important in terms of predicting growth or predicting churn? We'll test that in our models to either validate or give you feedback on why it's not true. And then we'll also say, well, what else do we want to consider in the model to get to, one, a high-performing model, and two, a model that gives us good insights on why there's risk or opportunity and what we can do to go either mitigate the risk or capture the opportunity. So end-to-end, that typically takes about 2 to 3 months to get data flowing, to get that first model built, and to really kind of get up and running. Yeah, the last part is that, so let's say 2 to 3 months right now, but we're doing a lot of investment on the product side to automate a lot of those data preparation processes today that are a bit more manual. For our data engineers and data scientists, it's probably 70% manual today, 30% automation, and that's going to flip. In the next 2 quarters, it's going to be 70% automated in terms of the data prep, and then really it's going to be refining and getting it ready for analysis and for the app. So we're making big investments to streamline that, where we think we can bring that down to more like 30 to 60 days.
That's a perfect lead into the follow-up questions I wanted to have, because you know, I want to paint a realistic picture for folks, right? If they're going to go down this path and explore this use case, which again, I think is a killer use case, and we're just going to stay micro-focused on, say, the renewal modeling. So I want to play back. There's three distinct steps there that you described. So first, we got to turn on the spigots. And that is probably not really a big deal. There may be, to your point, sign-offs. People have to agree to turn on the spigots to get data flowing into your systems. And the second thing is, after we turned on the spigots, we really have to do this map, because everyone calls things something a little bit different. Let's be honest, for some customers, that might be like, hey, they got a lot of good hygiene there. It's really clean, you know, and others might go, oh yeah, I got these fields on, I'm sure it's what that thing means. Oh, that one's kind of redundant. Yeah. So let's be honest, right? Some might need some more help right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then the third step is you are applying your expertise as a firm in terms of the modeling, which the customer most likely does not have that expertise, right? So you're like, give us your hypothesis. We take that and we really start to tune these models. So three distinct steps. Could take, like you said, 2 to 3 months to kind of get through all three to start getting a model that is providing insight, which people might say, gosh, that's 3 months. In my mind, I mean, that's 1 quarter. Let's just double it. Let's just say it's 6 months, right? To say to really get things cleaned up in the data, say you have a lot of extra energy in the middle there, whatever, to get to the modeling. Even if the answer is 6 months from now, you're going to have a model. That, again, I just want to play back the value proposition to folks so they get, I'm not doing a commercial for Reef AI. I'm just doing a commercial for this use case, right? That 6 months from now, you're going to basically be aware of variables impacting, risk variables you didn't even know about. You're going to get way more lead time about these variables. You're going to be getting the model telling you, when to start to mitigate. I mean, you're going to be in such a better place in terms of managing this. And then the final observation I want to make here is what you just put on the table, and I believe this is what's happening, is all of those steps are going to become more automated. So just the initial turn on the spigots, the software is going to get easier there. The second part, and maybe you could talk a little bit about this, my gut is, because people do have some data that is a mess, right, in terms of fields, in terms of whatever, that software AI itself can help there. That it can basically say, look, we can apply tools to get your data from a mess into something that is actually going to be more meaningful. Is that a fair statement? Do you see that?
Yeah, I think this idea of data augmentation and data cleansing and even fabrication in some cases, right? If there's gaps that you want to fill in, is definitely like what we're looking into in terms of roadmap. We get it from a lot of questions and they're like, hey, beyond our data, is there third-party data out there that can help us better understand our customers in terms of firmographics, in terms of other things that might, because, some of the things that they're really interested in is, hey, are there things happening in terms of news events or company, mergers and acquisitions, things that are kind of public information that we don't have stored in our database, but that could be included in these models that in our business could have a big impact on the health of our business and what we do. And so these are the things that we're looking into in terms of roadmap that we want to augment those internal databases with this additional information, one, to help cleanse the data and make it, you know, ready for the best models internally, but also augment that with additional kind of third-party data as a way to really get a robust picture of a customer and look at not only past trends, but really kind of look ahead to say, hey, if there's an industry that's in decline and they're a big part of our revenue base, we've got to be ready for that from a, you know, from a risk mitigation, from a forecasting standpoint, et cetera.
And so I'm going to make an observation and then another follow-up question. So the observation, and we've talked about this in previous episodes on Titanic, is the fact that I think one of the most powerful capabilities that these AI models are going to unlock for, you know, B2B companies working with their customers is what you just described there. Is, you know, today you talk to a customer and there's two problems that you have. Number one, you know, the information you're looking at, it's very stovepipe. So I'm in sales, I'm looking at sales information. I'm in services, I'm looking at service information. And so the first thing companies are going to benefit from is you can use these models to create a holistic view of your own data, right? So just what you're describing, let's ingest in a lot of different feeds from the company to get a better understanding of where this customer is, you know, whether it's renewal, expansion, whatever. Secondly, you can now start to bring in third-party data streams that right now, again, let's just say that I'm a salesperson. I'm working with a customer. Not only do I have sort of a, you know, a limited view of what the heck that customer is doing with my own data, internal data, because the systems are everywhere. If I'm going to find out, like, gosh, what's going on with their stock price? What's going on with revenues? What's going on with competition? What's going on? I got to go do a bunch of homework to try to figure that out. And if that's just being fed into the model and saying, hey, based on everything we know about this customer salesperson, this is what you should be, you know, pitching. That is a huge step forward. And I think it's going to be just a game changer for, you know, in terms of how, you know, technology companies can effectively engage with their customers, right? And just be on point with them instead of, you know, sort of fumbling around in the dark, which unfortunately we do quite a bit because we don't know. But the follow-up question I wanted to have, because you made the statement a little while ago about you prefer to lean on data that is, I don't know what your phrase was, that this was not
Either machine generated or generated through standard processes. Yeah.
Okay. So that's it. So let me just play that back. So I get the machine generated. So, you know, systems creating, you know, signal is a beautiful thing because it's going to be very consistent. You're going to know where it came from. So, and then what you just said, I think is important, is data being created by very consistent processes. Start there. Yeah. And then how did you describe the data that doesn't meet that because it changes a lot? And is there a term you have for that?
Data that requires people to enter and upkeep that information, right? I think that's where a lot of companies, you know, try to drive improvement by saying, hey, we're going to capture a lot of information about our customers and our, you know, our AEs or our CSMs are going to keep that information up to date. And that's going to be a reliable source of influence for us. And what we found is that, like, when it comes to building these models and what actually correlates to churn or growth, it doesn't ever have a very significant impact, right? And you can get enough. Mm-hmm. I have a point of view that it's a waste of capacity to have people enter and upkeep a lot of information manually. I think that there's enough signal in the data that you're capturing already to help you prioritize in a really effective way. And you can take the cycles that people are spending on data entry and put those actually into customer engagement and things that are going to move the needle more on revenue. If there's one big takeaway from everything today, I think we talked about one half of the equation, which is creating these models, which is the starting point to say, look, we're going to get more disciplined about the way we allocate resources. And we're going to use scoring as a way to say, we are going to put resources where it's most likely to have the biggest revenue impact. And that's the starting point. But if you can't get people to buy in and actually change behavior, if you can't convince them based on the scores that these models produce to invest differently, then they're not going to add any value, right? So there's a second part of the equation that I think is at least 50-50 in terms of importance, maybe even 60-40, which is once you have a good point of view on what matters and which customers are at risk or likely to grow, how do you actually get people to prioritize those customers and action them differently, even if it's something that, you know, based on their own knowledge or gut feel, maybe counterintuitive to them, right? How do you get them to really buy into the program? So the other part of this is what we put a lot of energy into, which is driving not only the scoring engine with Reef, but the recommendation engine, which is, okay, if we see a signal, there's a customer that's 6 to 9 months from renewal, they're showing signs of churn risk, we're going to drive a recommendation to the appropriate person. Maybe it's the account manager, maybe it's the CSM, maybe it's a combination of both. And then we're going to feed them. One, we're going to signal that this customer is at risk, so that it needs attention. Two, we're going to give them suggestions in terms of actions that they can take to mitigate that risk, right? And then so what's really important in all of this, because there's a lot of capable data organizations out there that can build machine learning-based scores, right? There's some organizations out there that are doing this already, but what's really difficult for even a great data science organization is how do we get the field to take our score and action it consistently and really engage these customers? And this is where I think Reef has really invested a lot to try to make this more plug and play and more consistent for organizations. So the idea is that there is some PR and kind of marketing you need to do around the scores themselves, right? So what has really failed in the past is this idea of a black box score that just shows up in CRM. And there was a lot of this with lead scoring back in the day where mm-hmm. there'd be lead propensity scores. And people just inherently don't trust, if a customer is a 78 or a 92, people don't know why and don't trust it. So yeah. There's an important step along the way that we found, which is being transparent and open about what we've done to create the score, what we learned with the score, what we feel good about today in terms of accuracy and what we're still working on, and just being super transparent with the team. Mm-hmm. And then setting up a quarterly cadence to communicate to them the progress, the results, et cetera. Having a very proactive kind of PR campaign around the score makes a huge difference in terms of really getting people behind the scores. The second thing that's important is getting frontline managers on board. More than anyone else in the org, they control, prioritization and the decision-making of where they spend their time. So if you can get them bought in and really spend some time socializing to them, they will help with adoption. Because the way these scores work is that as we drive recommendations, people give feedback on the quality of the recommendations. So thumbs up, thumbs down, was it a good recommendation? That signal actually feeds back into the model and helps the model get more precise, more accurate. Second, mm-hmm. the model will track, okay, we sent a recommendation, because every score that we create what we call outcome-based scores. So every score we create is optimized for a specific revenue outcome. That revenue outcome might be something general, like we want a churn prediction model, so we want to get better at churn reduction. Or it might be something more specific, like we're having downgrades of a specific product. So we want a model mm-hmm. that's optimized to predict for downgrades of this product, and we want to send notifications and recommendations based on that. So what Reef will do is Reef will benchmark your performance prior to sending the recommendations. It'll send the recommendations, track the follow through, and then show you the before and after, right? So post recommendations on this cohort of customers, here's what they actually renewed. Here's what they would have renewed previously. What's the delta? So you can really get a clear sense of ROI on any scoring model that you deliver. And again, the models have built-in feedback loops that feed back into the data set and make the models more accurate and perform better as more and more people engage and really action the recommendations, right? So this is where even organizations that are able to create scores have a hard time with, because the additional work to go drive recommendations, create the feedback loops, and track ROI is in many ways a heavier lift than creating the scores itself. So I wanted to just highlight that.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you put that on the table because, well, first of all, I want to validate your assertion that just creating a score and putting it in front of people is not the winning play. I have seen that in the wild, whether it's lead qualification, whether it's a health score, if it is a black box and it gets in front of, whether it's a customer success manager or a salesperson, and they're like, I don't know where that came from, their intuition is going to override that score. Hey, I talked to that customer. Yeah. They're fine. I looked at that lead. I just don't think that lead's really going to go anywhere. So A, I think you are spot on with that observation. But B, now, this thing about, you just said that it's the heavier lift to create the recommendation engine. So talk a little bit, because we've really clicked into how you create the initial modeling to get the scoring, right? So we understand that process and the steps you go through. But now, what is the data that you use to feed the beast there to basically say, hey, we're going to have a recommendation engine? So what are you drawing on? Let me just pick some stupid, simple example, right? So maybe it is, hey, this customer's at risk. We flagged the fact that they have not logged in and used this particular module, or not if people are using these features at this company. That means they're probably not getting the value. That means they're definitely at risk for renewal. Okay, that's the flag. We got a problem. Now, the recommendation on what you want, let's say, again, a customer success person to do whatever, how do you build that engine? What feeds that?
So when we develop the model, we'll have some really solid hypotheses about what people can do to best action the risk or opportunity, and then, you know, drive a better revenue outcome, right?
I'm sorry to interrupt you. So if you're working with, you know, a customer, yeah, I have to assume that they basically, you're sourcing that from them. They're saying, hey, here's our typical interventions when we have these problems. Are they providing that as the starting point, or how do you get going?
It's a combination of what we learn in the scoring model itself, right? So if we had a customer recently where there was a heavy correlation between industry and their ability to expand customers, right? So their large deal expansion was really concentrated in several industries. Yep. And one of the things they haven't done to date that's an opportunity is they don't have industry-specific playbooks for their reps, right?
Which is
really good case studies, really good kind of ROI analysis, et cetera. So there's a common set of tools that they can develop and provide as assets for their salespeople based on this industry designation, mm-hmm, that surface in the model that kind of instinctually made sense to them, but not enough so that they were proactively had done this on their own until we learned this in the model, right? So the model will, mm-hmm, surface things where you can augment your own kind of experience and kind of existing opinions on the business with what we learn in the model that will be the foundation for these starting recommendations or starting playbooks.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
It does. So I want to play that back because you're on a thread here that is, we've been talking about again in lots of episodes of Tectonic, around the fact that I personally believe that AI is going to be an accelerator for technology providers to verticalize, because most of them, yep, are very, you know, what we call the thin vertical veneer. They don't, you know, you go to their website and they'll say, oh yeah, we know a lot about healthcare providers, and they don't know anything about them, right? And so you're on this thread, right? So you're basically saying, well, look, we are now using these models and we can tell a customer, hey, guess what? You are really struggling with healthcare providers. That industry, your expansion, yeah, rate is, you know, half of what it is in other industries. You got to get more dialed into their issues. So A, we flag it. And then B, we start to help with the remediation in terms of, hey, you know, recommendations on, you know, you should build healthcare only playbooks or you know, whatever it is, right? So that's the step there, right? A, identifying problems you didn't kind of know you had, and then starting to put recommendations in place to remediate that.
Exactly. So we'll have a starting set of recommendations that, mm-hmm, are based on what we learn in the model and then best practice from our customer. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of works like as an analogy, like your Netflix algorithm, right? So when you first start using Netflix, it'll give you some recommendations, but it's going to learn from those recommendations and get better at future recommendations that are more dialed in, right? Because what's happening is the feedback on those recommendations is feeding back into the model. What's actually happening with the customer? So if Reef is recommending certain playbooks or actions, and there's a huge uptick in revenue preservation from that action or that playbook and not on another one, it's going to tune in to the model, the actions that are working better, and yep, then test additional things in order to make it better and better. So what we see with Reef is that there's a big step up. Like when you go from not using Reef to using Reef and using these models, there's a big step up in kind of revenue retention or growth or performance, mm-hmm, gain. But usually the first model is not completely optimized. It's a big step forward from where they were before. Mm-hmm. And then there's an opportunity for the model, this what we call continuous improvement process, yep, where quarter after quarter, month after month, we tune the model, we pull in recent data, and the models get smarter. The recommendations feed into the model. So you go from this big uplift initially to, mm-hmm, a model where you're getting this steady continuous improvement kind of quarter over quarter and continue to move the dial.
Yep. Now that completely makes sense to me. I want to go way back here in terms of the conversation, but I don't want to lose this thought because you and I talked about this once before, and I think it's a really intriguing thought. And that is this issue of how much time we have employees inputting data, right? Yep. Manually, yep, inputting data about the customer. And I put a hypothesis on the table at our last TSIA conference. We were doing this executive roundtable. And I basically said, you know, we've built all these systems, you know, like CRM systems and customer management systems, and we have all these fields and we're collecting all this information. And I think in the world of AI, the paradox here is it's going to be a less is more world, because you're going to realize that a bunch, yeah, of this data we're capturing doesn't really tell us anything. And so, yeah, we're going to drop it. And like you were telling me last time we talked, you're like, gosh, I mean, if we could just get data entry off the plate of salespeople and CSMs, yeah, or, you know, mostly off the plate, elaborate a little bit more on sort of your futures here, sort of your vision of this, right? Because I think that's, yeah, a great threat.
Yeah. So I think it's still probably a fairly distant future where CRM, you know, customer success platform, all these data capture platform, these kind of databases for customer information are fully automated, right?
Yeah.
And the inputs into those are extracted from our conversations and other things going on in the business. I think we're still years away from that, right? So I think there's a middle ground right now, though, where there's, I think, tremendous kind of capacity to be captured in a lot of the maybe rote information that is informational about customers. And again, capturing sentiment is important, but there are very efficient ways for like having the human opinion as part of the picture is important, because if you have a machine learning based score and you can have some checks and balances against what the AE or the CSM's opinion is, like that's a really good thing to have. But you don't need 10 fields of kind of descriptive information to get that, right? You can, with a quick kind of signal from that CSM or AE, you can compare that against what the risk score is, you know, on your machine learning score. When they agree, it's typically a good sign. When they disagree, it's a great basis for a conversation. I am a big fan of kind of removing a lot of heavyweight workflow and mandatory processes with customers just because you hit a certain milestone or because it's been 2 weeks since your last check-in.
Yeah.
I'm all about this idea of use scoring as a way to identify outliers, both on the growth side and the risk side.
Yeah.
Put your energy into those outliers, not just customer success, but customer success partnering with sales and services and pre-sales. Really invest in the outliers and monitor the middle. Actually spend less time with the customers that are on track, you know, based on the way you score them in the data. Mm-hmm. And exception manage them, right? Wait until you see a signal. And what you do is you free up a lot of capacity. You take a team that's overburdened and you take a lot of the busy work off their plate. So when they are spending their time, they're doing it in a more strategic way, engaging customers, doing strategic planning, et cetera, and less time on the rote busy work that drives them crazy, right? Yep. So I think if you can really move this outlier model and place smart bets about resource investment, again, this is exactly what we proved at MuleSoft, is that you'll improve performance at a lower cost footprint, which I think is what everyone's after today.
Oh, absolutely. People are looking for what I call leverage, right? I mean, people want to grow revenue in these technology business models, but they don't want to do it by just continuing to throw more labor to get that additional revenue, right?
Yeah.
They want leverage. But, you know, I'll close on this thread of data entry and data capture, et cetera. Again, I think we've created a world where we've invested a lot of money in systems, in all the software.
Yeah.
And I think literally it's not going to be, you know, 10 years from now, 5 years from now, I think we're going to look back and say, gosh, on a scale of 1 to 10, we were getting like a 2 out of what we could, because, you know, we were collecting all this information we really didn't need, you know, our processes weren't tight. So the data was kind of crappy. We weren't getting really the insights we could, you know, and I think once we get these types of models in play, it's going to be a better experience for the employees. I do believe that. Much better experience for salespeople, service people, et cetera. Yep. And I think it's going to unlock the ability to just deliver a lot more meaningful value to the customer. And I keep saying those two things, and I say them because I think it's true. I think that's the road that we're on. So, you know, I just want to make the observation, because I'm watching the clock here. You know, we spent our conversation here just really clicking deeply into the renewal use case and how you start to really leverage AI to take that to the next level. That same approach is going to unlock, because if you get the models right, it's going to be an accelerator for expansion, right? Because it's going to be making recommendations there. It can make recommendations on adoption, you know, specifically. So also these engines can help on the front end on lead qualification. So there's a lot of there. If you get these models up and you get, you know, experience with how to, as you were, you know, rightfully pointing out, not just creating the scoring, but getting adoption of the models, getting the recommendations, whether it's for pursuing leads, expansion, et cetera. If you really build those muscles, I mean, there's tons of there. And I'll, you know, maybe give you sort of like a closing question here. You know, we were talking about timeframes, right, to get these models going.
Yeah,
so it might be 2 months. If somebody's really messed up, it might be 6 months. But when it comes to ROI, when people start to compare the investment they have to make in time and treasure, not only in your firm, but their own internal resources on this, before they start saying, but I now see enough of an incremental improvement, right, in renewal, expansion, whatever, in revenue, right, overall, you know, what is that horizon for companies that you're seeing so far?
So let's imagine that we get the model produced in the first quarter, right? So we get a good model. Then we say we're going to operationalize the model. And that means we're going to start sending recommendations to somebody involved. Let's imagine it's a retention use case, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to send a 6 to 9 months in advance when we see risk, we're going to send a notification. Mm-hmm. What we find though is when people first engage with Reef, they're playing catch up, right? We don't have the luxury to ignore everything in the next 6 months. Like right. If we see risk on a customer that's expiring this quarter or next quarter, they still want to know about it, right? So what we see is we'll see like, okay, there's a little bit of catch up in the first quarter or two while they're working to get ahead, because what they want to do is get to a model where they're operating well in advance of renewal so they can mitigate the risk, not at the last minute, but well in advance. So once the models live, we see an ROI in that first quarter. The second quarter is where we really start to hit our stride. Like we just did a QBR with a customer recently. It was our second quarter in operation. And for that quarter specifically, we identified a little over 2 million in risk. So customers that were scored red in the Reef model, which meant that they were 43% likely to churn, mm-hmm. right? A yellow customer was 8% likely to churn, green customer less than 1% likely to churn, right? So we sent recommendations just on the red customers because it's a universe that's small enough that it's realistic to action all of those 43%. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly which 43% will churn, but we recommend that you action all of them because if you do, you're going to recover enough revenue that it really is worth the investment. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was over that quarter, we sent 83 recommendations on these at-risk accounts. For 51 of the accounts out of the 83, they had moved from red to yellow or red to green, which meant they've gone from 43% likely to churn to either 8% or less than 1% likely to churn, okay. right? So that meant statistically, they were likely to recover almost 500 out of the 881K that they would have typically churned out of that 2 million in those customers, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the cool things about what we do is the ROI on these models is completely transparent. We will benchmark your performance, we'll send recommendations, and we'll show you, here's what would have happened to these customers on average prior to engaging the recommendations. Here's what's actually happened as a result of people actioning these models, right? And so the second quarter is where people really start to hit their stride, and then it just grows from there.
It's interesting. I'm just going to make this observation. I'm going to tie it to an episode that we just did on Tectonic with Chad Quinn, who has this company called Ecosystems that focuses on connecting value. Like if you're a technology provider, how do you show your customer that there's value in the solution? So we had a great discussion on that. But in some of their research, and I think you'll appreciate this in what you're doing for a living, is that customers don't buy solutions just because of a specific ROI. In other words, you could knock on somebody's door and say, look, hey, if you deploy Reef, I guarantee you, you know, because of how we're going to improve renewals, that, you know, your ROI is going to be X. No matter how big that number is, their research says that doesn't get you across the goal line. What it is, the concept of working with a customer and co-creating, like, what does the customer value here? How can you co-create that value? And I think that things that we were talking about today, I believe there is a big ROI for this particular use case. But I think as you're going on this journey, it is about making the life better for people that are touching the customer. Again, I mean, so you're saying, look, if we can give you early warnings, right? If we can give you recommendations, if we can, so you're not guessing, right? If you can make sure that you're actually working as a salesperson or a service person on the right customers, because they're the ones that really need the love right now, that's where people are going to, I think, lean into a solution like this and realize, you know, we're making everybody's life better here. And along the way, we are going to get an uptick in revenue. It's a really interesting use case. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming in. Again, we spent a lot of time just on that one use case, but I think it was really good to click in because I think, again, I just see a lot of our member companies are stuck on this. You know, not just this use case, but AI in general. Like, gosh, how to get started? Again, my data is not ready. And what I keep telling people is these use cases are already real. Does it take work? Absolutely. But what you articulated today is you're not saying, look, in about 5 years, we're going to have these models that are going to be really cool. I mean, this is stuff that is, quote, below the waterline in the world of AI. These models can absolutely do this stuff. You got to put some work in for sure. But the other thing is, if you're not operating this way 3 or 4 or 5 years from now, the way you're managing renewals, you know, the way you're deploying your employees is going to just look incredibly dated because, you know, it's going to be night and day. So again, hey, I appreciate you coming in. All the best luck with the company here as you grow it. And I always close here with the question of the day. So the question for today, every tech company I know is looking to grow revenue more efficiently. How is your company going to achieve that objective. Cheers, everybody.